in 100 years.
That shit house,
if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
It is Wednesday, the 22nd of July. Welcome to Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL podcast. My name is Will Anderson.
And my name is Charlie Clawson. And Will, we have another podcast called TOEFOP, which is much like this, probably with more insightful AFL chat than we do on this AFL show. But it's a
I mean, mostly on this AFL show, we've talked about an AFL player who has barely played a game of AFL this season. Like, I think we are the Ben Cunnington curse. We are the extra weight on his shoulders. We've been blaming his new haircut, but it's actually our podcast and the extra heat we're bringing to the Ben Cunnington discussion that has meant that he hasn't been able to play for North Melbourne.
Well, that is sort of summing up my point, because when we do TOEFOP, which is just a free-form conversation, we never go into the plan, I always have that sort of pang of anxiety 5 minutes beforehand of like, oh, what the fuck are we going to talk about? But sitting down to do this show, I'm like, oh, it's great. This is why podcasts are normally about something, because we can actually just sort of talk about stuff that's happened and comment on it and give our take rather than trying to think of a show on the spot.
But it's hard to keep up with what's happening anymore, because football's going to be every day.
I know.
Like, I mean, this is good news. You know what? This new schedule for the AFL is great news for our podcast that always comes out late. Because sometimes now it'll be coming out early. We don't know what time means anymore. We'll be coming out before rounds, in the middle of rounds. Like, the entire season's up in the air now. So I feel like this is, you know, when they're talking about which team this season will suit? I feel like we're the podcast this season is suited.
Yes, like, totally.
You know, you look at your other AFL podcasts and they felt a little lost in this time. They haven't quite known what to talk about. Whereas for us, it's really, we've come into our own this season. I feel like we are a pandemic podcast.
It's weird too, because when the season went on hiatus after round one, you'd think that would be the perfect time for a show that waffles on about only tangentially linked football issues. That's when we would have our time to shine. That's when the Fox Footy podcast and the Real Footy podcast would be tuning into us to find out what the hot button issues are. But that's when we decided to go silent. Then the football came back when there's actual games to talk about, and that's when we started up again, but not talking about those games or those issues.
It's no fun to not talk about football when there is no football. That's why we have that's why we have summer off. The only fun that we get is not talking about football when there's actually football to talk about.
Yeah, I do feel like we have I've been going through the mail. We'll get to it later in the show. But the fan fiction thing has taken off, and we have at least four new stories to read. We can't get to all of them in this episode. We're going to space them out over the next few weeks. But as I was going through it, and people have put a lot of effort into these fan fiction stories, I'm like, if this is the lasting legacy of our football show, that we created a pocket of the universe in which there is Nat Fyfe and Ben Cunnington fan fiction, then I'm perfectly comfortable with that.
If that's our legacy, is there a chance that we could get into the AFL Broadcasting Hall of Fame based on that?
It would have to go to the next level. Like, what's the next logical step from this podcast? Like, so what happens with other podcasts like Dirty John or whatever is they get like a Netflix, you know, miniseries starring Eric Banner or something. Right. Is it possible that one of the fan fiction stories that is pitched on this show gets picked up by a streaming service? They're desperate for content right now. Australia is one of the few places in the world where you can film. Someone hears it. Maybe it's like an award-winning screenwriter, like an Oscar-winning screenwriter. Like, I don't know anything about this game, but these seem like two intriguing characters. They're the original Odd Couple.
Well, what if it's one of those filmmakers who, instead of making one of the ideas into a film, wants to make a series of vignettes? So their movie is really just a series of like short films all about Ben Cunnington and Nat Fyfe. Now, I was going to say, who would you cast as Ben Cunnington and Nat Fyfe? But if you did it that way, you could do it like that Bob Dylan film. And in every scenario, you could have different actors playing the role of Nat Fyfe and playing the role of Ben Cunnington.
Or are we thinking too small? Like, should it be more of a Fast and the Furious type franchise? Like, we have all these different stories and scenarios. Like, the Fast and the Furious franchise started off as like a kind of crime, you know, action movie. And then it has just become action comedy. It's become a superhero movie. It's become almost science fiction in a way. Do we, rather than just burn it all in a series, like we just release a series of films like the BCNFU?
So we get to like episode 10 and Nat and Ben go to space. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. or film 10. I mean, why not? Let's go feature length with each one.
Okay, so, okay, we filmed 10 movies based around Ben Cunnington and Nat Fyfe, a series of AFL films. Amazon have come in with some money. They're doing little documentaries about, you know, four of mm-hmm. the team's players and presidents and these sort of things during this season. A bit of your ESPN 30 for 30 or your Michael Jordan documentary, you know, behind the scenes sort of style. Maybe there's some money from Amazon for us to also make our AFL films, our AFL fan fiction films starring Ben Cunnington and Nat Fyfe. So again, who then do we cast? If we suddenly get a big check from Amazon and they say, go out there, what we need is you guys to attach some big names to this project so that we can actually sell it. Who do we get to play Nat Fyfe and who do we get to play Ben Cunnington? Who's the easiest to cast?
Okay, I'll start. I will start with this person isn't who you'd cast, but this is the type you're looking for, whoever the modern equivalent is. And I've talked about this before, that Nat Fyfe is the Hansel of the AFL. So a young Owen Wilson would have been perfect. He has the surfer look, the kind of cool style. You know, he's not like traditionally handsome, but he's good looking enough, you know, and he's charming, all that kind of, he's Nat Fyfe. The Ben Cunnington is a more interesting one because, I mean, Tom Hardy, he's already played in Australia and he's played Mad Max. So maybe we get Tom Hardy to play Ben Cunnington. That fits, right?
I think Tom Hardy could definitely play Ben Cunnington. He'd train for it. He'd get his body perfectly in shape. He'd learn how to fish. He'd buy a boat. This is what Tom Hardy would do in this situation. Tom Hardy would actually shave off his own hair and go and get hair transplants just so he could understand what it was like to be inside the mind of Ben Cunnington. It'd be hard for the director to contact him because he'd be back on an old-fashioned Nokia. That'd be the only way he could contact him. I say we go a step further. If we're really going to get some budget behind this, we get James Cameron to use the technology he used in Avatar to create an Avatar Nat Fyfe.
Okay. Oh, that's great. That's great because Nat Fyfe is basically metahuman. Like, no man can be that handsome and accomplished and talented and physically capable and all that kind of stuff. So I like the idea of making a completely CGI Nat Fyfe and you make him a god, essentially, flawless.
Right. Well, I mean, what do you mean make him? He is a god. He is flawless. Okay, you fix his hamstrings in post. That's what you do. Yeah. With technology, you get James Cameron to fix his hamstrings in post. But essentially, Nat Fyfe looks like one of the Na'vi. Are they called Na'vi?
Na'vi, yeah.
Yeah, the Na'vi. Correct. Of course, their AFL football team, the Na'vi Blues. We are the Na'vi Blues, the good old Na'vi Blues. They always sing. And they are blue, so I guess that makes sense.
Well, it's what happens when Geelong and Carlton merge. You get the Na'vi Cat people.
So he's playing for the Na'vi Cat people. But Nat Fyfe looks like one of those Na'vi in whiteface. Essentially, all you're doing is taking the blue out of the mix and you've got Nat Fyfe.
And you know this, right? When he first started at Fremantle, when he was like a rookie, his nickname was Avatar because they thought he looked like one of the cat people.
That's how we get James Cameron interested. We get some old things. We say, look, this guy has been on board with Avatar since the start. Or do we get Nat Fyfe to play in these Avatar sequels that are coming out, you know, two through five? Is there an opportunity that most of the Na'vi are CGI, but we get Nat Fyfe in the movie playing a real-life Na'vi? They just blew him up blue for the movie.
Yeah. It's like the Blue Man Group.
They ring up the Blue Man Group and they say, guys, we've got a request. We want to make Nat Fyfe a real-life Na'vi for this movie. Because there's in Avatar 3, there's a game of football. And we need Nat Fyfe to come in.
A zero gravity game of football. So do you think, all right, we've got to get the life rights for a start before we can even pitch this project to Hollywood. Who's the easier negotiation?
Well, Nat is going to cost us more. That's what I think. It's going to cost us more to get Nat Fyfe's story, but he's already got an infrastructure in place. I imagine they're already talking, you know, what it costs to use his likeness and, you know, what it's like for commercial deals. So I'd say dealing with his people would actually be quite smooth because they'd already be used to dealing with these sort of situations. Cunnington is like, he's like Bill Murray. You know, there's only one telephone line that you can get him.
A voicemail.
He has a voicemail. Yeah.
No agent. He may get back to you. You've just got to leave a 30-second message pitching your film.
You can only get him on the CB radio when he's out fishing. That's the only time he will take calls about it.
And do you reckon Nat would request, like, script approval?
Oh, interesting.
See, I reckon Ben Cunnington would, if you can get Ben Cunnington across the line, I reckon you're sweet. I don't reckon he's got no interest in visiting set. It's not his world, mate. Rather be on the boat. But I reckon Nat Fyfe, because he kind of treads that world of celebrity and, you know, fancy parties and stuff like that. I reckon Nat Fyfe's going to have some notes for you.
That's okay. We can, you know what? I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Nat hanging around the set, you know, maybe talking to the actor, you know. Well, I mean, if there is no actor, if it's CGI, he might even need to come in and sort of, you know, do some of it himself, like, you know, so they can develop the CGI. So I'm fine with Nat Fyfe being involved in the process.
Okay, but what if Nat Fyfe, he comes to us with script notes and he says, look, there's this running kind of subplot where I don't know my teammates' names and I'm not really comfortable with that. I want you to change that. Do we stick to our guns and say, no, Nat, like, this is our vision, you know, and we're committed to the truth. And everyone knows that you don't know the name of any of your teammates, so it stays, or we walk.
Yeah, I would simply say to him in that situation, we will put as many names of your teammates in this movie as you can name right now. Go.
And he's like, Michael Walters. The guy got tackled in the goal square. What's his name? Lurch. The dude who used to play for GWS, Marty McFly. No, George McFly. Does Aidan Ballantyne still play for us? I should mention too, we got quite a few angry messages on Twitter. I went into the Two Guys One Cup account after we posted last week's ep, and there was a bunch of Freo supporters who were like, you didn't even mention us in that win over the Saints last week. Two on the bench, one of the greatest, you know, comebacks in the history of the game, blah, 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 blah. They were really pissed off. And to that I say, well, it's a Saints game. I'm not going to talk about the team that beat us.
No. Absolutely not. That's
sorry.
I mean, I think, you know, shame on you guys for thinking that we would talk about that. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and look, I mean, and if you'd backed it up against West Coast, maybe an apology would be forthcoming this week, but you didn't. You didn't. You went back to where everyone thought you belong.
What I like is I've looked up that message from Peter Quiggles, and Peter says it like this. Any risk of you two actually mentioning Freo in that win? Two down on the bench. Massive lead chase. Fyfe injured and sitting forward. Clutch goal by a young player to ice the game with momentum against us? No? Okay. No worries. Do you think he actually meant, okay, no worries? I don't feel like if there were no worries, he would have sent that message in the first place.
Do you think he talked himself round? He was angry when he started the tweet and then calmed down by the time he got to the end.
What I also like is this bit of feedback. Good pod this week, but Samson's mother was told not to cut his hair by God. His wife or girlfriend betrayed him to the enemy and cut his hair, rendering him a prisoner. He prayed, got his strength back, brought down the temple. Anyway, there you go. So we've had two really disparate bits of feedback around those conversations.
Well, I think the feedback is commensurate with the content of the show, right?
I mean, it does give us an indication about what we've talked about. So, okay, well, let's talk about some football. Should we talk about some football?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, you must be very excited. I was texting you over the weekend. The Bulldogs were red bloody hot.
So I sat down to watch the Bulldogs versus the Bombers. And, you know, sometimes in the past I've really not liked watching the Bulldogs live, but this season I've got a whole new attitude to the AFL, which is just remembering it's just a game and whatever happens, happens. And, you know, we're all in this together. You know, I watch the AFL like I watched Lost. You know, it's more about the mysteries and what the big twist will be next. It's not about getting anything resolved at the end. And I thought, I'll have a look at the Bulldogs. And my brother, who's a Bombers fan, was sending me messages from his kids, you know, cheering for the Bombers. And then I sat there, and in the first quarter, it was like the Bulldogs.
First quarter was great.
Yeah.
It was such an entertaining opening quarter of football. It was just blistering. The ball was just flying around. It was so quick.
And I got the impression that the Bulldogs were squandering their chances. It really felt like we were on top of the game, but we just missed a couple of opportunities to be as far in front as we were going to be. And I was a bit worried that, you know, Essendon had started to stand up and we were... But then, I mean, second quarter was good, but that third quarter was magic as a Bulldogs fan. It was just so much fun to just watch that game and be able to relax into the idea that they weren't going to beat us and you could just enjoy them winning.
And they were above you on the ladder when you played them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that is the formula. Because I was... What, as it was became clear you're going to win that game, I was already looking to next week to see who you had. So you've got Gold Coast this week, who are still above you on the ladder. So that's a good sign because I was like, well, if Gold Coast lost last week and dropped below you, then I reckon you drop it this week. Because we've talked a lot about, you know, what is the trademark of a team and the Bulldogs. And it only feels like it's in the recent years. Your trademark is beat everyone above you, lose to everyone below you.
I mean, it is so sad, but it's absolutely the case. And again, this might be the season that works for us. Because I think this season more than any other season, and this is what I do like about the 17 games, and I don't mind about the fact that it's all getting jammed together, is it suddenly becomes less about wins and losses in a way. And you really do focus on the ladder. You really do start to look at that idea of going, well, all we need to do is make the finals. How can we make the finals? Where are we? Who are we playing? What teams are playing each other would mean that one of those teams doesn't get a win. And it does actually seem to be much more about that strategy of where you are on the ladder. I can even see over these, you know, 20 games in 20 days and teams playing, you know, in 4-day and 5-day breaks. I think that they're going to pick teams based on the ladder. I think they're going to look at games and go, well, there's a fair chance that we're not going to win this one and it's not going to affect our ladder position one way or the other. So this is the one where we rest all the players or vice versa.
Yeah, 100%. I should tell you, I was texting also with Amit Baines, friend of the show, Amit Baines. Is he the COO at the Bulldogs now? Is that his official role?
He's something important at the Bulldogs.
Something official. And I was saying to him, it's a good win and everything. And I was like, while you're up there, you should be having a word with Matt Rowell, see if you can get him down to the Bulldogs. Oh. And he said, that would be handy, but I think there's more of a risk that the players from the Bulldogs fall in love with the climate up here and want to stay in the Gold Coast.
I mean, I'd be fine with that. Like I've said before on this show, the Byron Bay Bulldogs. It's just the time for the Byron Bay Bulldogs has come. Chris Hemsworth already lives here. He's the number one ticket holder. If you can't take if you can't get Muhammad to the mountain, you take the mountain to Muhammad. No, the other way around. We take the Bulldogs to where Chris Hemsworth is. We can't be expecting Chris Hemsworth to be flying into Victoria in these modern day pandemic times. He can't risk that. We need the Bulldogs to move to Byron Bay. I mean, to be honest, like with Chris Hemsworth living in Byron Bay and me living in like within 20 kilometers of Byron Bay, that puts, you know, of their well-known supporters, that's a cluster. That's a hotspot. This is a hotspot of celebrity Bulldog backers. Move the team to Byron Bay.
You just need to get Julia Gillard and Shane Delia.
So Julia Gillard lives in Adelaide, so we can rule her out anyway. Doesn't matter. We're not moving the Bulldogs to Adelaide, so Julia's out of the equation at this stage. Shane. Could we get Shane? Yes. Right. This is a... We get Shane to open a restaurant.
Yeah, easily. It's such a foodie destination, Byron Shire now.
I'll open a little mini Maha in Federal, you know, down the Federal shops, just like serving a few takeaway Maha meals.
Yeah.
If it gets
a couple of Biggie Smalls vans. So the Cats that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
New flag favourites. No. Suddenly not flag favourites. Proving the rule that we discussed last week is everyone's flag favourite for a week and then you shit the next week.
Yeah, so Geelong, I mean, had a bad game and then obviously with Ablett going home for a little bit, they'll miss him.
Selwood getting injured.
This is the season, right? It is one of those seasons where you're just like, you can't really predict what's going to happen. I mean, Port Adelaide at the moment look unstoppable, but... Like the problem is if, like, you know, Robbie Gray and Charlie Dixon got injured, suddenly they'd look really stoppable again. So I think every team's in this situation at the moment of you just don't know from week to week. You're an idiot if you try to predict anything.
Is Robbie Gray, to bring up a boring football cliche, but if Robbie Gray played for Collingwood or the Bombers or Hawthorn, would he be a bigger name in football? Because he does what he does so consistently. Mm. Like, it was such an amazingly composed shot for goal. But then you think about, you know, 2 years ago, that game against St Kilda where we were up with 10 seconds to go and he took that ball out of the ruck and just kicked it from 50. And he's done it, like, multiple times.
Oh, no, no. He's the superstar of the competition, Robbie Gray, I think. I think in South Australia they consider him to be huge, but I don't know if it's here.
Who are their legends? So Gavin Wanganeen, Warren Treadray, do the Corns, who are their, like, who's in the Port Adelaide Hall of Fame? Not the South Australian Santa Fe, the
Port AFL Adelaide League. Power, Port Power Hall of Fame. Let's have a look.
Because I would be interested to know where Robbie Gray ranks amongst those guys, because, I mean, it's a little hard. Wanganeen was a Brownlow medalist and a premiership, dual premiership player, so that probably puts him in a different category. Treadray, you know, was a power forward who premiership player, probably led their goal kicking for a number of years. But it feels like Robbie Gray should be a bigger star.
I would have thought that Robbie Gray is in the top five Port Adelaide power.
So who are... Well, give me the other four then. So Treadray, Wanganeen.
I'm trying to find if there's a Port Power Hall of Fame, but it's just giving me the Port Adelaide Footy Club Hall of Fame.
Well, maybe our podcast Mike can continue searching.
Yeah, that would be great if you could. But yeah, no, I mean, off the top of my head, he would definitely make the top five. Him...
Well, if you
Justin
look up,
Westhoff,
if you, Mike,
Warren Treadray.
Fergus Watts. Oh, no, he's from Adelaide. Mike, if you look up at the very least the best and fairest of Port Adelaide. Hey. Oh, here we go. He's found it. It took him 2 seconds to find it.
Well, I was trying to talk and type at the same time. That's harder.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'm not trying to bully you. Okay. Here we go. This must be from the Santa Fe as well, because I don't recognize these names. Bruce Abernathy, John Abley, David Boyd, Craig Bradley, before he went to Carlton, obviously, John Cahill, Bobby Clayton, Angelo Congier, Kane Corns is in the Hall of Fame. I didn't realize there was a bloody twerp Hall of Fame.
Well, you've been president of the twerp Hall of Fame. Okay, I've got the John Cale medal, which is the best and fairest at Port Adelaide. Okay. So let's go back and we can see how we go on this. So, all right. So who
won? Sorry, just before you get to that, I'm just going through these players who've obviously played in the Sandfall. There are some fantastic nicknames here. You've got Ron Brick Hoffman, Samson Shine Hosking, Henry Kneebone. It's not a nickname, that's his actual name. Alan Bob McLean. Bob is the nickname. Alan was called Bob for some reason.
Okay, so let's go backwards. 2019, and we have actually done Best and Fairest at some stage, so see if you can remember who the 2019 Port Adelaide Best and Fairest was.
Travis Boak.
Travis Boak won the Best and Fairest in 2019. Who won it in 2018? I've previously mentioned him already on this podcast.
Justin Westhoff.
Justin Westhoff in 2018. In 2017, a player who's no longer playing for Port Adelaide but is still playing for another club. Well, not playing much at the moment, but is on the list at another club.
Oh, I was going to say Chad Wingard, but I'm guessing that's wrong.
Think closer to your own world.
Oh, Paddy Ryder.
Paddy Ryder won the Best and Fairest in 2017. In 2016, who won the Port Adelaide Best and Fairest?
Robbie Gray.
In 2015, who won the Port Adelaide Best and Fairest?
Robbie Gray.
In 2014, who won the Port Adelaide Best and Fairest?
Robbie Gray.
So I'm going to say Robbie Gray makes the top five just based on that. In 2013, it was not Robbie Gray. It was a player who now plays at another club, Chad Wingard. And then in 2012, who won the Port Adelaide Best and Fairest? Again, previously mentioned on the podcast.
Kane Corns.
Cane Corns, and also was elected president of the Twerp Hall of Fame that year. So 2011, there was a tie for the Port Adelaide Best and Fairest, and someone who's already been mentioned might put them into the, you know, conversation around best Port Adelaide players of all time, a current day player.
Travis Boak?
Travis Boak. So he won in 2011 and he won in 2019, Travis Boak.
That's amazing.
It was a tie with Jackson Tringove. In 2010, Cane Corns won the best and fairest. In 2009, it was not Cane Corns, but it was...
Chad.
No.
Oh. 2009, I can't even think of any players they had.
So we're back to... It was a Hall of Famer, Warren Treadray. We both agreed. Okay. 2008, who won it?
Warren Treadray?
Cane Corns. 2007.
Cane Corns is a triple best and fairest winner.
Well, funny you say that, Charlie, because who won it in 2007?
Cane Corns, you're bloody kidding me.
Four-time best and fairest at Port Adelaide, Cane Corns. Brendan Lade won in 2006. Treadray won in 2005 and 2004. So that gives him three at this stage. 2003, Gavin Wanganeen, fair enough. Yeah. 2002, here's a guy who might make the list. We have not mentioned him so far.
In what year, 2002?
2002.
A Port Adelaide superstar.
Superstar?
He'll be included in the list when history is finally written about the Port Adelaide Football Club. It will definitely mention this guy, and his name is... What position did he play?
He played ruck.
Dean Brogan?
Yes, Dean Brogan. Yes, future Hall of Famer Dean Brogan. Sounds like he might be related to a Transformer.
Ah, Matthew Primus.
Matthew Primus. Warren Treadray won it in 2001, so that makes him a four-time as well.
Right.
And then before that, Brent Montgomery, Stephen Paxman, Adam Kingsley, Darren Mead, Scott Hodges?
Yeah. Scott Hodges is Robbie also West. A Hall of Famer, I believe.
And Scott Hodges won in 1990. Yeah, but you really are at that stage. Yeah, so you've got to say of your modern days, it's got to be Robbie Gray, Travis Boak, Gavin Wanganeen, Warren Treadray, Matthew Primus, Cane Corns.
Well, of the modern players who are in the Hall of Fame, it's only Warren Treadray and Gavin Wanganeen. And Cane Corns. Cane's in. Of course he's in. I'm surprised. Did you know Cane Corns had that good a career? I always thought he was a tagger or something. Maybe I'm the one who's judged too quickly in this instance, Will.
Probably a good example of what you were saying before, though. Would those guys be bigger stars if they played in Victoria? Or at least would they be more known to the rest of the competition?
I mean, I was working on a TV show in the noughties that was shooting out of Adelaide. And I remember Chad was like the darling of the Adelaide Advertiser. He was always in the social pages and he was dating an actress at the time and he was the glamour boy of Port. And I think Cane just sort of was the quiet achiever. I think Cane was the Emilio to his Charlie Sheen, so to speak, his Chad Sheen.
They look good, Port Adelaide. Yeah. I know they had an off week last week, but they look really fantastic. And Charlie Dixon, like, he is... He's whatever's happening in lockdown. I think even when we come out of the pandemic, they're going to have to not tell Charlie. I feel like this has got to be the Port Adelaide plan. Is they've just got to pretend that we're still in a pandemic well after we're not in a pandemic anymore for the sake of Charlie's football.
Yeah. I think too, this game gave a lot of Carlton supporters heart. I mean, they seem to be the darlings of the AFL at the moment. It's all good press for Carlton. As I brought up many years ago on this very show, don't give Carlton an inch. People who are cheering for Carlton and, you know, wanting their fans to be happy and stuff have short memories, because if you grew up when we grew up, Carlton supporters were the worst going around. We need to, if we're going to let them back into the fray, we need to do it with some conditions. They've misbehaved. We've sanctioned them. They've got a lot of players now that we like. We like Cripps, we like Betts. We even like Levi Casbolt now. But we need to, we can't just embrace them wholeheartedly. We need to be very careful how we welcome them. Because before you know it, if they get a run on and they actually become a force in the AFL, we'll regret it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. That's why the weekend's game was perfect.
Yeah.
We get to see them be good and then they lose after the siren. I would like a series of games where when the siren goes, Carlton are in front so they can take heart out of that. And then someone has a kick after the siren to break their heart. That's what I want to see for Carlton. Hope and then hope crushed at the final moment.
Do you feel sorry for North Melbourne? Did you see any of that game? Because I'm starting to feel sorry for North Melbourne. They started the year with like so much promise and we were all up on them in the first two rounds. But gee, they looked like tired and slow and sore and just out of sorts. And Ben Brown, my God, I like Ben Brown, so I don't want to go on too much, but he is so out of form. Like his confidence is shot. It's really, he's not getting great delivery or anything like that, but there's few shots of goal he had. Just everything's out. Like his timing's out. That long run-up he does just kind of looks silly now. And he just looks bereft of confidence.
No Cunnington, no North Melbourne. Mm. It's as simple as that. He is the heart and soul of the team. And I'm going to say he maybe even has some sort of teaser pony effect on Ben Brown.
Yeah, definitely.
You know how like a champion racehorse will often have like another pony or like a dog or a donkey or something that is like his best mate?
Yeah.
And he only performs his best when he has that calming influence around? Yeah. I think Ben Brown, what we're seeing is Ben Brown is nothing without Ben Cunnington.
I agree.
The two Bens.
Do you think, this talk at the moment about, well, North are in a rebuild. Clearly that's what this year is teaching them. And so if they want to get back into the draft, Ben Brown is their best bet. 28 years old. He's a Coleman medalist. For a team that's vying for a premiership like Collingwood, who needs a big tall forward, perfect. Are you of the belief that you, and to use a cliche that junk time love, throwing the baby out with the bathwater?
I think you could get something for him. I think if they knew they were going to have the season they were going to have this year, they might have seen what Higgins was worth on the open market. Because again, just a player as good as Higgins, if you added him to a team that was already great, you know, it could be the difference between you playing in the finals and you winning a premiership. And so I think they held on to everybody in the hope that they were going to be, you know, kind of pushing towards the finals. And they haven't had Zeebel and they haven't had Anderson for most of it and they haven't had Cunnington, and that's their grunt. That's their heart. It's just very hard to tell because those outside players, they normally get such good outside service from those really tough inside players. And so then if you don't have the inside players getting it out to the outside players, then suddenly you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and it's also, it's just their style of play, this kind of going, creeping around the boundary line, kicking long to a contest and stuff. I guess if you do have those inside midfielders, it makes sense. More stoppages, you just wear down the other team, you get it out to your distributors. But they looked bad. I mean, I actually thought they looked worse than Adelaide. I hadn't seen any North Melbourne apart from when they beat us in round one, and I hadn't seen any of Adelaide. And then this round, I saw both of them, and I was like, geez, Adelaide looked pretty good against us, or at least, you know, not as bad as everyone's been saying, but I just thought North looked like subpar.
So I don't know how the Shinboner, you're more a student of the Shinboner spirit than I am.
Mm.
I need to ask you a question.
Yes.
Like, is it, so ordinarily the Shinboner spirit, because it feels to me like we at the moment we've got a real deficiency of Shinboner spirit.
Yes.
Is there a possibility that in these times when, you know, you can't share Gatorade bottles, you know, we're in heightened COVID awareness, that maybe some of the magic of the Shinboner spirit is that it's always supped from the same cup? You know, the idea that somehow it diminishes in power if everybody has their own individual serves of Shinboner spirit, or is that not relevant? What is happening?
I don't know. See, I think the Shinboner spirit is there.
Mm.
I think it's not been utilized, because the thing that makes Shinboner spirit so great is it's not based on a confidence thing. It's not dissimilar to the backs against the wall. Shinboner spirit is based on being a team that just kind of grinds and plies your craft, and you just out tough, you out muscle, you out just determination is what gets you across the line. And so I think they're being competitive. So the Shinboner spirit is there, but it is not being utilized in the right way. Now, whether that's a motivational thing or they need to get separate bottles of Shinbone's spirit. Or maybe, like you're saying, the separate bottles of Shinbone's spirit has diluted it, because maybe it's more of a, they all need to sup from that one thing. Like, we don't know, because that's the big mystery, Will, is how they actually ingest. I mean, we joke about it on the show, but we don't know how they ingest the Shinbone's spirit. Do they all stand around? Is it like a Vicks thing? Where they all stand around an inhaler and they just inhale the Shinbone's spirit? Or is it a little flask that gets passed around? I mean, whatever it is, I feel like it's the communal aspect of it that makes it potent.
Yeah, I feel, I just don't know why, but I've always imagined it's like, you know, one of those things you'd find at a Turkish restaurant. What did they call those?
The shushka pipes, whatever.
Yeah, so one of those that just have, that you kind of have to pass from mouth to mouth. It's all, I've always just imagined it a little like a peyote ceremony or an ayahuasca ceremony, where there's like a communal sense of everybody imbibing it together. But I've never really thought about how it is actually dispensed.
See, I saw it more like a pagan ritual, like a Freemason type ritual. Like, I imagine
a Dennis pagan ritual. That makes sense.
It's a Dennis pagan ritual. Like, I imagine that they're all in their white and blue striped robes. And there's like a holy grail style chalice. Yeah. Like, Crackers Keenan walks in as the high priest of the Shinbone spirit and goes up to the altar and unlocks a tabernacle and takes out like the ornamental grail and holds it above his head. And with, you know, he just invokes the spirit of the Shinbone. And, you know, like in Catholicism, they believe that you were transmorphing, you know, the spirit into this physical object. He draws... He converts, he turns water into Shinbone spirit, into this holy grail. And then that is passed from player to player. And I imagine it's like there's probably some incantation that Crackers says. He, one by one, he goes down the line. He's like, yeah, sniff this, inhale it, the Shinbone spirit.
You know, I mean, so it's a pagan ceremony. It's a Dennis pagan ceremony. They go out into Pagan's Paddock.
Yeah.
And Crackers Keenan, you're saying, is more your sort of witch doctor character.
Yes.
He comes out and he kind of is... Well, what's going on with Crackers? Is there a chance that Crackers hasn't been able to travel with the team? Is that what's happening? He's not in the North Melbourne hub.
That might be it. And Crackers would be of an age too where he'd be in a high-risk category. I think we've just... We've solved the problem. Like, Crackers can't be around crowds. Crackers can't travel. Then they're not getting their pre-match ritual down. This is the stupidest show that anyone has ever listened to.
Can't believe you guys didn't talk about that could win my Fremantle. Really? How can you not believe that?
Were there any other games that caught your fancy? What about the Demons? You've been down on the Demons.
Can I just say on the Bulldogs, the one thing that I wanted to say about the Bulldogs was, it was fun to watch Cody Waitman play his first game.
Yes.
Like, Cody Waitman, and this was always, you know, I was talking to a friend of ours, Craig Coombs, who was a former recruiter for Port Adelaide amongst others, I believe. I think he did some time at Port Adelaide before he went to Hawthorn. And we were just chatting, as we do, about football. And he was saying, you know, we were talking about the idea when Waitman got drafted that he was this kind of player. And it's just so great when somebody who, like, basically the way that he played in that game was what the recruiter's notes said about him when he got drafted, that he was going to be this, like, you know, small, exciting forward who would fly for marks and, you know, kick fluky goals and just be really exuberant. And he was all of those things. And I think that's exactly what the Bulldogs need, is that little bit of magic in the forward line like that. It was very exciting to see him take that hanger, to see him kick that banana from the, you know, the boundary line. It was unreal.
But that banana was like a 50-meter banana. Like, generally, the further out you are, it's harder to get the bend. But he just curled it perfectly. No, he was exciting. The whole, I don't know what happened to Essendon after quarter time. It was like they just sort of stopped running, but it was fun to watch, even though it wasn't necessarily a close game, just the kind of skills of the Bulldogs. Oh. It's got to give you a lot of confidence until you play a team beneath you.
That Tim English moment where he, like, basketball style out of the ruck to Bontempelli going through the middle. I was just like, that. And, like, English was... I mean, again, he was playing against a team that doesn't have, like, a gun ruckman, you know, has a handy ruckman, but not like a gun ruckman. And Tim English is still of an age where he's been absolutely bullied by some of the bigger, you know, ruckman going around in the league. But you show... Well,
Brody Grundy beat him up.
But that game showed that he could be the next Brody Grundy. No doubt about that. When I watched Tim English play, he is like a tall gun midfielder. So great. He's like hands around the field taking high marks and stuff are unreal. He's got quick hands. Yeah, apparently Tim English was a... he was a midfielder for most of his junior career, and then he had a growth spurt. So he just has those.
Yeah.
Essentially, Tim English had the opposite football career to what I had, which was I was really tall early and dominated, and then everybody else got as tall as me, and it turns out I wasn't actually that good at footy, whereas he was like a good midfielder who grew heaps.
I mean, it's just a shame that his father, John, is no longer with us. Can't attend the games because I'm sure he'd be so proud. I mean, to see how the Bulldogs are all together now... Winning games, loving playing together.
I mean, you have one-eyed supporters. We just wanted some black-eyed supporters. But it's unfortunate. But he dedicates every match to the memory of his late father, John English.
The thing I'd say about Tim English, and I agree with everything you've said, a great player, emerging player, but he hasn't yet nailed upon a look.
No.
He's a bit too clean-cut young footballer. Like, even Bont... You know, when he started, you know, he just was a clean-cut footballer. And then he's like, you know what I am? I'm fucking samurai ponytail guy. That's me. I'm a bit of beard, so samurai ponytail guy. So I'll be interested to see. Some players never get a look. Like Trent Cotchin, Ben McAvoy looks exactly the same as when he started. I hope Tim is not a Ben McAvoy because I'd like to see him come back from one preseason and it's a radically different look. You know, maybe it's a mohawk. Maybe he's got neck tats, something. Just... He looks just a bit boring at the moment.
He's very goody two-shoes in his look, but maybe...
Yes.
I think the only thing that he could really do is sort of David Lynch, David Burnett. I feel like the shape of his head, he's got to go some sort of like... quiff. You know, like, yeah, get some extra height. You know, put some fear into some opposition players by just having an extra 6 or 7 centimetres of hair. On top.
If he did that, he's in danger of looking like Beavis.
Yeah.
Or Butthead, whichever one is the blonde one.
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon lean into that look. I would like him to be rucking, look like, and just like off the field, start wearing like David Lynch style clothing, you know, like turtlenecks and, you know, cool black suits and thin black ties. I would love to see that be Tim English's look. Like a stretched out David Lynch.
Stretched out David Lynch. Demons look good. Christian Petrarca. Let's talk about the truck. When St Kilda had the opportunity to draft either Paddy McCartan or Christian Petrarca, and this is no knock on Paddy McCartan. What's happened to Paddy is beyond his control and has nothing to do with his ability as a footballer or anything like that. But I remember at the time, Christian Petrarca was widely reported as being the standout draftee that year. And the fact that we didn't draft him, to see what he's become now, like even when he was declaring himself to be a Hall of Famer and stuff in his first year and everyone's like, all right, settle down, mate, like whatever. You still knew that he had that ability. And even though it took him a while to find it, now that you're seeing it, it's like, God damn it. Like I understand the mentality of, well, tall forwards are harder to get. So, you know, I think the Bulldogs have just paid $1 billion for Tom Boyd and St Kilda were like, we don't want to be doing the same thing. So rather than get the best player, we're going to go for the best tall forward. But just thinking about what our midfield would be like if we had Christian Petrarca.
He has come late. Like, you know, it's taken him a while to get to where everyone always expected that he would be. But now that he's here,
it's worth it.
Yeah, you can see, like He looks like a classic example of a guy who finally got his body right, you know? And it'd be interesting to know why he didn't get it right in the last 3 or 4 years. Like why it's taken him this long to get into the shape to make him into the footballer that he needs to be. But he is, if you're a Melbourne fan, you're suddenly like, oh, he's a proper A-grade footballer that you could build this next generation around, no doubt.
Well, it's just that combination he has of... Like he's a bull, like he's an absolute tank and unit. You can't tackle him. He can just don't argue. But then his skill set is amazing. Like those passes he was kicking on the weekend, there's one to Wiedemann. I think it was like a They went coast to coast, and it was just like, holy shit, off one step, just this like laser. Yeah, he's going to be a superstar, and it's going to bug me for the next 10 years.
It's the thing when you watch Bontempelli, and Bontempelli's had an okay season, but he hasn't had his best season. Like, you know, you hope that he might warm up into it and really start to dominate. He had a couple of really good games, but this thing is, even when he's playing just a fine game, an okay game, you just want the ball in his hands because you know that every single disposal that he ever gets creates something. And Petrarca's turning into one of those players where you just like, when he gets it, it's not just that he's getting it heaps now. You know that it's actually going to turn into something effective for the team.
Yeah, and he's the kind of player too that I think will get you watching Melbourne games as well. Like even as good as they were 2 years ago, Max Gawn, like Ruckman isn't going to make me want to tune into a game, but a goal-kicking midfielder definitely gets you excited.
Yeah.
Should we get to some mail, Will?
Let's do it.
All right. As I said, we've had some fan fiction sent in. We've also had a lot of people sending us pocket profiles. So we'll start with this first one, which is neither. This is from... hang on, I'm not wearing... it's Ator. Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. Due to a quirk in programming, I have watched North Melbourne 3 weeks in a row. Two players who seem to get a lot of mentions, Sean Attlee and Jasper Pittard. I'd never heard of them. 202 and 153 games played, respectively. I have become Will and Charlie. As you were so keen on player profiles last week, why don't you go through the profile of a player on each list that has played the most games that you have never heard of? It's a win-win for everyone. An obscure long-term player gets some recognition, you learn about him, and your pocket profile player is picked. Keep up the good work. Anton. Oh, he must... Maybe he's got two names. Anyway, Anton.
Okay. I love this because Jasper Pittard, I'm right across because there was a goth period of his that I was quite obsessed with. But who was the other fella?
Yep. Sean Attlee.
Okay. So couldn't pick him in a lineup. For $1 million, would not know who Sean Attlee is. How many games has he played?
202. He's like a life member.
Probably puts him in the top 20% of players who've ever played the game. And I could not... We have a football podcast and I could not identify
him. Top 5%. That's what it puts him in. The top 5% of players who've ever played the game.
Really? Yes. Top 5%. Okay. Do we have a pocket profile on Attlee? Can we find any information about Attlee?
Let me see if I can look something up. Okay. Sean Attlee profile. I'm going to the North Melbourne. Okay. So if you could think of the most generic face in the world, that is Sean Attlee. I'm going to screen grab it and send it to you.
Thank you. Does he have blonde hair?
No. If you told me this guy played for Sydney... I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. I've just dropped it in the message window.
Okay, have a look. I'll have a look. Oh, wow. Okay. It's like somebody took five players from the Gold Coast Suns and did one of those face mashes. Like, he doesn't actually look like one person. He looks like three or four different people that they've just stuck together to make a person.
He's 27 years old. He's 189 centimetres, 86 kilos. Now, it's funny that you say he's like an amalgam because statistically, he is fairly much average in every department. So he's averages 15 disposals, which is league average. Averages 7.9 kicks, average. Handballs is above average, 7.1, but marks are below average, 3.1. So they cancel each other out. So that's average as well. His meters gained in a game is 245, which is average. And he gets two tackles a game, which is above average. But when you think about it, it's just more than one. So,
well, basically, I think if we go through the player who's played the most games on each list that we don't know, we're going to find they're all good average players. This is your GOP, your good ordinary player category, right? Somebody who just stays on the list by being reliable and consistent. Yeah.
And it sounds like, look, no club honours at this stage. Okay. So after playing in the forward line, he debuted in 2011.
Didn't he win, North Melbourne's MAP 10 years in a row, most average player?
After playing the forward line for the bulk of 2017 and 2018, so 5 and 6 years into his career respectively, he was a forward. Attlee returned to defence. His dash and ability to break lines was an important asset off half-back, and he averaged a career best 20 disposals a game. All right, so that was back in 2018 was his he peaked. He managed the fifth most bounces in the competition, 33. After playing 99 games straight, the number 18 missed the round 20 win over Hawthorn after dislocating his kneecap in the previous round. He was able to return and find some strong late season form, including a career best 29 disposals against Port Adelaide.
And now, what number did Wayne Carey wear at North Melbourne?
18, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
So is this a deliberate ploy by North Melbourne to go, look, last time we gave the 18 to someone who wasn't average, things got a little messy for us down at the club. Let's find the most average player there is and give him number 18.
It could be. Did I say his number was 18?
Yeah. Oh, no. Was it not the number 18? You might have said number 18 regard to something else.
He debuted in 2018. Yeah, I don't know what his number is. It doesn't say here what his number is. But we can follow him on Twitter. There's a little link. Oh, no, there's not.
Is there...
I'm clicking the link and it's dead.
Is there any pocket profile about Sean Attlee?
I'll say Sean Attlee pocket profile.
Because if you've played 200 games and you haven't got a pocket profile, that is also a bit of an indication of where you are in the club pecking order.
Doesn't appear to be. Just a lot of stats. No, nothing. We can't find anything. He's a man of history. If listeners out there can find anything on Sean Attlee, keep it to yourself. We don't care. Next email is from Nick. Hey, Will and Charlie. Following on from your discussion about how good it was to have some unfit players dominating in the AFL, I've come up with an idea to bring back Heritage Round. You may remember that back in the early 2000s, the Heritage Round was a chance for clubs to bring out their old jerseys, which is a nice idea, but obviously it didn't last. What Heritage Round needs is not just the jerseys from previous eras, but also the body types. Each year, Heritage Round should be held after the bye, giving players a two-week opportunity to eat pies, drink beer, not train, and hopefully put on as much weight as possible. In order to incentivize teams to make a real crack at the team in each game, to have a real crack at it, the team in each game that puts on the most weight gets a 5-goal head start.
I think 5 goals is too much, but here's what I say. You incentivize every kilo over with a point.
Goals per kilo.
Points per kilo. So, say, for example, you could be like 15 combined, you get 15 kilos in front of the other team. That's how much you put on. That's a 15-point head start.
Yeah, that's better. That makes more sense. It's fairer in this insane idea. I'd love to see a version of Tom Hawkins that looks more like Tony Lockett running around for the Cats. I'm sure there are other old features of the game we could include as well. Biffo with no consequences, tribunal appearances where the opposition players say nothing bad actually happened. Warwick Capper-esque tight shorts. Would love your ideas. Cheers, Nick. Okay, what are some other heritage? What do we want to bring back in football?
Can I just say on this unfit footballers idea, which I love, by the way, would this be an opportunity for people who are on the fringes of the group to eat their way into the team? Because say you're a player who's, number 25 on your list and you can't really justify your place in the team by goals you're going to score as a small forward. But what if you come in not as a small forward, but as a medium forward or even a large forward?
You guys playing three tall forwards? No, we're playing two tall forwards.
And you've already kicked three goals. Like you're 18 kilos up. You've already kicked three goals before the game starts. You don't actually have to get a touch.
You don't need... And the best bit is you don't have to chase because you can't. You'll have a heart attack. I mean, we've talked that we would love to bring back cars honking their horns at Adelaide Oval, park them on the hill. I'd like to see that for Heritage Round. I mean, I think the idea of seeing unfit footballers running around is the Legends match each year. I mean, when you see that is AFL-level players who have country footballer bodies.
What if for Heritage Round... the teams have to be fielded by ex-players. So for every heritage round, it gives us a bye in the AFL for the regular players, but it also gives us all something really exciting to watch. We play a round of football where the teams have to be fielded by ex-players from that team who've retired.
But we have to break it into eras, all right? So there's like, you got to field a VFL era team, AFL era team, maybe you sort of break it into decades or half decades, just so you're not getting like recently retired players like Brent Harvey dominating or something like that.
You have to have a mixture. So I think it would be like you could have like say 6 players from the last 5 years. You can have like 6 players from the last 10 years. And then you can kind of, the rest of the list has to come from the last 30 years or something.
Yeah. Or maybe you have to pick your team lines. You have to assign different decades. So maybe you're like, okay, so 80s, our forward line is from the 80s. So we're going to get all the old high flyers from the 80s in our forward line. Our midfield are going to be from like the noughties, you know, back when everyone was flooding and it was a bit dour. And our defence is from the 70s when it's just knocked some fucking teeth out.
Each line in your team has to be from a different era, but each team gets to choose which line they field from which eras. So you might get the thing where it's like the centre line's all from the 70s from one team, but they're all modern day players from the other team. Brilliant. Here's the reason we should be on the competition committee.
Are you ready for some fan fiction, Will?
Yes.
Fifington fan fiction. This is from Rick. Hey, Cuppers. I'm normally too lazy to contribute to anything, but your podcast's recent pivot to being largely about Nat Fyfe and Ben Cunnington's story ideas has spurred me on to become cupwardly mobile. Nice. Here is my Fifington pitch. Well, this is the first time anyone has actually come up with a term for it. Fifington, that makes sense, right?
I like Fifington. It's got a good ring to it. It's catchy.
Otherwise, it's cunf.
Also good. To be honest, I'm happy to lock either in.
If you want to send us some cunf fiction or some Fifington fiction, you can. You do that at 2guys1cupafl@gmail.com. That's the number. To the number one, 2guys1cupafl@gmail.com. Okay.
2guys1cumf.
Rick continues, think inner space, but with much more shin bonus spirit. Shinner space, question mark. In an effort to make sure the season isn't derailed by COVID, the AFL turns to experimental sports scientist Professor Stephen Dank. Second time he's appeared in the fan fiction. Unrelated to either club, but has appeared twice.
Love it.
He's such a good villain.
Love it.
They turn to Stephen Dank to find a cure. Professor Dank discovers that the virus can be destroyed with a direct dose of Shinbone Spirit. The only way to administer the dose effectively is to shrink someone down who naturally produces Shinbone Spirit. Inject them directly into the infected person. It is discovered that Ben Cunnington fell into a vat of Shinbone Spirit when he was a baby, and is the best candidate for the job. They sell it to him as being the greatest fishing trip of all time, and he agrees. Then, when Chris Fagan, Dennis Pagan test positive to COVID, they decide to go for it. Ben is shrunk down into his little submarine and is about to be injected when in through the door burst some poorly disguised West Coast Eagles players. The Eagles can see how the season is progressing and they are desperate for COVID to bring the season to a premature end. Clearly, this was written 3 weeks ago when they were travelling badly.
You know what I like about this, though? Instead of a little submarine, Ben Cunnington should be in a tiny little fishing boat.
A dinghy.
They should get him on his boat.
No motor. He's going to row. He's going to row up the bloodstream. Because that's how he does it.
Just punching COVID antibodies in the guts behind the play.
In the confusion.
That's how he pitches it. He goes, I can do it, fellas. Once I see those antibodies, I'm going to punch them in the guts behind the play.
In the confusion, the syringe flies out the window and into a passing helicopter, becoming embedded in the pilot, Nat Fyfe, who inadvertently injects Ben Cunnington into himself while trying to remove the syringe. A heartfelt action comedy ensues as Ben gives Nat a healthy dose of Shinbone Spirit, and Nat shows Ben the benefits of good personal grooming. They have to work together to make sure the AFL season isn't called off. Also, while he's inside Nat's brain, Ben discovers an anomaly that is causing an inability to match names to faces. He fixes it, and Nat is suddenly able to name every single one of his teammates. Anyway, you get the gist. Keep up the great work, Rick.
It was worth breaking your duck, Rick, of contributing to things for that. I loved it.
P.S. It might be time for both of you to admit that both of your teams are going pretty good this season. Where is the hype? Just keeping a lid on it, mate. Keeping a lid on it. Let's finish with the pocket profile.
I think that both of us are of the opinion that our teams probably won't win, but at the same time could win, because who knows? Like, at their best, both of them, if they had a right run at the right period of time, could do very well. But there's just no point getting even excited about that, because there's just so much of this season that is a mystery. It's just like, you just got to watch it, see what happens. Like the idea that we're good enough to actually win if we got there, but not really bank on the idea that we're going to win.
It's called a loser mentality, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to Two Guys, One Cump.
Okay, we had a bunch of people send this in. It's a pocket profile of Harry Himmelberg. Harry Himmelberg, who, friend of the show, Alex Williams, has been desperately trying to give the moniker the disaster after the Hindenburg. Hasn't worked. I've been to the football with Alex where he's yelled it out and it hasn't caught on. I don't know if he's still trying. Alex, if you are, stop. You're embarrassing yourself.
Himmelberg, Hindenburg, Titanic. Oh, yeah. Okay,
Whopper.
Burger King, King, Don King. Don Scott, Scott No Mates.
Max King.
Mates, Cobbers.
Mating Rituals. Richie Rich. Casper. There you go. He's called Casper. All right. Okay. So there's even a, they even give you a, there's a, what do you call it? When there's a headline and then there's a sub, is it a subheading? Is it a subheadline, a smaller headline? Pocket profile Harry Himmelberg, key forward, chef, funny man.
Chef and funny man, TV funny man, Harry Himmelberg. That's actually a funny man's name. If you got to the end of your a current affair or something, they said, we're going to go to the funny man, Harry Himmelberg, for his take on the news.
I'm showing you the photo they've used in the profile, and that is a funny man photo.
It's funny because he is a good looking cat and he's actually dressed as like Ben Cunnington for Mad Monday. So,
okay. Do you have any pre-game rituals?
Yes, he does.
I'll give you a hint. It's something to do with, like all of them, it's generally about a breakfast thing.
Okay, it's something he has for breakfast. Harry Himmelberg.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Kind of.
Coffee, something to do with what he drinks.
Holy shit, that's exactly what he said. Coffee in the bus or on a car trip. How did you know that? Well done. You know Harry Himmelberg better than he knows himself.
Well, I'd like to say so far it's more a sign that I know what they serve at breakfast more than I know Harry Himmelberg. But, you know, let's go on, see how I go.
Okay. Growing up, who was your favourite player? And he had two. One was an Eagle, one was a Demon.
The Demon player. So he's young. So it's got to be like a kind of modern day Demon player. Is it a modern day ish Demons player?
He's a naughty
Jeff Farmer.
Player.
Oh,
no, after. Well, same era, but a bit.
Gary Lyon.
No, as in later.
Later than Gary Lyon. No, I don't know.
Probably the Chris Grant of the Demons in the noughties.
Alan Jakovic.
David Neitz. Don't you think he was the Chris Grant of the Demons? Reliable,
no, that's
utility, could play up forward or down back.
No, he was a great player, David Neitz. That's a good suggestion. I can see that. And who was the other one?
An Eagle. One of the bad boys of the Eagles.
Carl Langdon.
No, wait, Himmelberg wouldn't have been born then. Think of like...
Ben Cousins.
No.
Daniel Kerr.
Yes, Daniel Kerr, Sam Kerr's brother. Toughest individual opponent. His name's two, and they both play for Richmond.
Alex Rance and Shaw and is it Griggs? Who's the other guy who's played? No, is Griggs the... No, okay,
no,
who are they?
No, you're thinking Grimes.
Grimes.
It's Alex Rance and Dave Asprey. Does Dave Asprey play for...
Yeah, I think so.
Richmond? He's not the North Melbourne player we're just talking about.
No.
I've forgotten already.
That was Sean Attlee, I believe.
I've forgotten his name. I knew there was an A in it. does your jumper number have any significance?
No.
And then he continues, but location in your locker room is prime. So there is some strategy. I wonder what number he is. Okay. Doesn't say. Doesn't say. What guess what number Himmelberg is?
Harry Himmelberg is number 11.
Could you look that up, please, podcast Mike? Harry Himmelberg, what number he is? Okay. Funniest thing a fan has said to you over the fence. And he is being sarcastic with his response.
Hey, Hindenburg.
He's number 20. Disaster. He's like, this fucking actor who comes to every game. He's a mad fan. Sometimes he hangs out with Steve Waugh in the crowd.
You guys heard of Julian Assange? Anyway, so he played, you know who Julian Assange is, right? WikiLeaks? Anyway.
He says, get a haircut is always a knee slapper. So a little bit of attitude there.
Harry Himmelberg, no, I can understand that.
By the way, is number 27.
Okay.
Teammate most likely to coach? Never heard of this person. First name is Zach.
Zach Braff.
Yes. Scrubs is Zach Braff.
Zach State's Zach Braff? Is that Zach Braff?
Yeah. Teammate most likely to be club president or CEO? Is a triple barrel name, sort of. Three syllables at least. No, it's triple barrel.
No, tell me.
I mean, he may at some stage, like, it's not a dissimilar name to Mark Lacroix. Play also a Western Australian.
No.
May have come from Freo. Matt De Boer.
Oh, no, I never would have got that.
Or is that South African? Your funniest teammate. And then he's mentioned him before.
Matt De Boer.
Zach Sproul. Zach Braff. So this is intriguing. There's no more information, but his funniest teammate is Zach Sproul after Dil Buckley's departure. So I don't understand. Something happened when Dil Buckley left the team.
Well, Buckley, when he left, I think that he was the previous funniest person, is what he's saying. I don't think he's saying his comedy chops when Dylan was out of the picture. I think what he's saying is Dylan was the previous funniest person and Zach has moved up in the rankings.
I thought like Dylan left and Zach's like, hey, everybody, check out my Dil Buckley. Duh, I'm Dil Buckley. I can't kick straight. And everyone just cracked up.
I prefer that version.
Who had the best haircut in AFL history? And I think he's being a little cheeky here because the person in question didn't have that much hair.
Oh,
but very famous.
Andrew Jarman. Chris Judd.
Known for flying.
Liam Ryan. Flying Liam Ryan.
Bruce Dool, the flying door.
Oh, okay. That's a bit old school.
Yeah, but that's why I think it's a joke, right? Because, you know, old bald guy.
Well, he's a funny man. Sorry, okay. I forgot that he is a chef self-professed funny man.
Do you have any secret party tricks? And he's being cheeky.
Well, he's stand-up comedy, obviously. his Netflix special that he's got in his pocket to launch after his football career. Is it a physical act?
He doesn't name it. He just responds with a cheeky retort to the question. Do you have any secret party tricks?
That's for me to know and you to find out.
Close. They're secret.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Unique person you follow on Twitter or Instagram. And I don't know who this person is. He's an amazing artist, according to Harry. CJ.
Kanye something. West.
CJ Hendry? Who is that?
Don't know.
Is that like a musical artist or a... Anyway. That is a woman, not a man, Charlie. Okay, thank you, Mike. Okay. Name a celebrity you can't stand. And this is someone that you and I have talked about at length on our other show who we love.
The Rock.
You have gone down many rabbit holes with this particular artist, a singer.
Oh, a singer.
Yeah.
A singer that we love that I've gone down rabbit holes on.
Yes.
Give me another clue. What style of singer?
Uptown Funk.
Not that big a clue. Bruno Mars.
Yeah, but it could have been Mark Ronson. I was trying to throw you.
Yeah, it's a good point.
At which store would you max out your credit card? And again, cheeky answer, not a legit answer, not even really a store. I understand what he's trying to do, but like the previous Pocket Profile we did, they don't quite understand what a joke is. So Where would you...
No, he's a notorious funny man. The credit card shop.
I mean, it makes about as much sense. Fight Club.
Oh, okay. All right, sure.
A, not a store. B, they didn't. There's no money transacted at Fight Club. You kind of missed the point of the film. They're anti-capitalist.
I just want some soap, mate. He just really wants some soap. It takes a lot to wash his hair.
What are three things left on your bucket list? Okay, so the first thing is a pretty common dream for most average Australians. The second one is a holiday.
Buy a house.
And the third one is what every footballer would say. No, own his own business. What about his holiday? What's his holiday destination? Yep.
Exotic? Australia. Is it an exotic? Oh, it's in Australia.
Tropical.
Broome.
A lot of camping happens there.
Kakadu.
Fraser Island. Okay. And what's his football dream?
Win a premiership.
Do you have a dog?
Yes.
What's its name?
Larry Himmelberg.
Ollie? And what breed?
Ollie is a Great Dane.
Staffy. What do you order at the bar? I believe this is a kind of beer. I believe this is an American beer, maybe.
Oh, Coors.
Red Stripe. Is that an American beer?
West Indian, I believe.
Okay. First album you bought? Again, cheeky answer, relates to the fact the time in which he grew up, the generation he belongs to, and their attitude towards paying for things.
I stole my first album.
Pretty much,
I downloaded my first album.
Luckily, I grew up in the LimeWire era.
Oh yeah, okay, yep.
First concert you attended, and I believe this. I mean, Podcast Mike will probably pull me up on this as well. I believe this is a festival, but it may also be a band. And it happens in Melbourne. At least it happened.
I believe this is a festival, but it may also be a band. Of all the old person things that we have ever said on these shows, that may be the oldest sounding thing that we have ever fucking said.
Good Life in Melbourne. Is that a band or is that a festival? Mike, it's a festival. Okay. Never heard of it. Okay. Will, what is something about Harry that we wouldn't know if we hadn't read the subheading?
That he's a bit of a funny man.
That he can cook.
No.
What's his favourite holiday destination? Place that you and I know well?
Byron Bay.
Los Angeles.
Oh.
Favourite movie? Again, if you listen to our other podcast, we've mentioned this person many times.
Adam Sandler?
Correct. Movie?
Happy Gilmore.
Correct. Favorite TV show?
Comedy or drama?
Drama. Probably ran about 8 seasons.
Breaking Bad.
Critically acclaimed? Sons of Anarchy.
Okay. Oh, he's got... He's got a classic Sons of Anarchy look. Of course it's fucking Sons of Anarchy.
What's his favorite band or musician?
Is it an artist DJ. I would know? Like DJ,
yeah.
Jazzy Jeff.
A helmeted DJ. There's a few to choose from.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, not Daft Punk, because they have two helmets. This is a single helmet, is it? Yeah. G-Wizzle. No, what's
his... G-Wizzle. Now he sounds old. G-Wizzle. It's Dead Mouse, yes. Poor Mike, who's just like dying to answer these questions. What Mike the Millennial, watching these two old men fumble their way through the names of current day bands and festivals, must be fucking driving him mental.
Dead Mouse spelt with a 5 at the end, apparently. Is that how Dead Mouse spells his name?
Definitely. Yeah, you're right. Okay, favorite carb? Which is easy.
Pasta.
First meal he eats when the season's over. A pub staple.
Chicken schnitzel.
Yeah, a palmy. Is he a coriander fan?
Yes.
Huge no.
Oh.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
Huge yes. Tomato sauce in the fridge, yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Oh, okay.
What non-football accomplishment are you most proud of? Again, a bit of a humorous answer. A dig at a place he grew up in.
Oh, leaving the shithole town that I grew up in.
Surviving the winters of Canberra. What's your most embarrassing childhood memory?
I don't know.
I mean, this is not embarrassing in the slightest. When you wore the wrong uniform to school, like, is that the most embarrassing memory? You needed to get bullied more, Harry.
Depends what the other uniform was. Like, if you wore like a Prince Harry style Nazi Germany sort of uniform to school instead of his school uniform.
What's his best childhood memory? And you just give me, it's a holiday destination in New South Wales.
Going to the South Coast on holidays.
Yes, yes. Can you give me a bay, maybe?
Bateman's Bay.
Correct. Who would you like to swap places with for one day?
Sports person?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I might have to look him up.
Any other clues?
Shares a surname with a very famous soccer player. And it may even be his son. I'm just looking at no, he's not. He's an NFL player who shares a name with probably the most famous soccer player ever.
Gary Maradona.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Oh, okay. I mean, anyway. I was about to criticize your clue, and then I realized this is a game that has no stakes.
And nothing at all. All right, let's wrap it up by giving our tips for this week.
To tip until Wednesday, because we'll do the podcast again on Wednesday. So we have to look at, I don't know, is there games every... Are there Monday and Tuesday games this week?
No, not this Saturday. No, the last game finishes on Monday, so I think we're all good. We can give our tips on Twitter if people... I mean, do you think anyone is listening to our tips, to try and win a prize, an office pool or anything?
I mean,
like
you make a fair point. We've had some good rounds. There was a couple of rounds ago where we both had a really good round.
Okay, so first up, the Bulldogs taking on the Suns. Both coming off good wins. Bulldogs looking hot, but the Suns are above you, so that's probably the deciding factor in my tip. I'm going to tip the Bulldogs in that game.
I'm going to... this is a danger game, which is such a weird thing to say about playing the Gold Coast, but... should be a really exciting game, I'd imagine. And I am picking the Bulldogs, of course.
It is the closest of the round, seventh playing ninth. Okay, on Friday, the Giants take on Richmond. The Giants were just sputtering, Harry Himmelberg's Giants. It'd be a great statement match if they could, slay their grand final nemesis. But Richmond looked good. Richmond have done that thing that they did last year where they lost a bunch of players and just gone to a new level. But... it's funny, we joked last week, or you harangued me for suggesting that Leon Cameron may not keep his job at the end of the year, but that's all I've been hearing about in the press this last few days, is that Leon Cameron safe?
Well, I think that Leon Cameron is...
Cameroon. Leon Cameron.
Imagine if Leon Cameron came out and he goes, it's Leon Cameron. And this is what's been holding me back. Or maybe he has an alter ego. He's like, guys, it's time for some tough love. You need Leon Cameron to come in here. They need to bounce back. Obviously, a lot of heat on them this week around that. I think Cameron's about to re-sign his contract. But obviously, the Delidio thing about them playing as individuals, that'll be in their mind. This could be a danger game
that's
for
a bit
Richmond.
Cheap, right? Why did he have to say that? He didn't need to say that.
Didn't need to, but he obviously decided he wanted to. Must be fun, to occasionally just like bag your ex-employers like that. Like, I've worked in some shitty jobs where I would love a public forum where I could just say how shitty the situation was and everybody would like talk about it all week. I can imagine how intoxicating that would be. It would be hard not to say shit like that all the time. And then you can't go on.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah, it'd be a bit like guiling though. A dude who came in, played two, three seasons, wasn't really part of the fabric of the club, just come in and pots him. It's like, well, you didn't get to know Harry Himmelberg and find out how funny he is and that he's a pretty good cook.
I mean, I got to be honest with you, we didn't get to find out how funny he was from that fucking pocket profile either, but anyway.
I'm going to pick Richmond in this game because I think they look good. Who are you picking?
I think Richmond, but I could see this as a danger game.
Saturday, poor old North Melbourne, 17th on the ladder, take on a resurgent Carlton who haven't actually won that many games that everyone seems to love. And again, let me just urge caution. Do not embrace this team without some pre-existing conditions.
No Cunnington.
If you have pre-existing conditions, don't embrace anyone.
No Cunnington again, right?
Yeah, that's right.
No Cunnington, no North Melbourne. That's my policy. So This has got to be a game that North Melbourne are also going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were so bad, but something about the way this is set up. There's so much love for Carlton right now, and you know they're the darlings of the media, and North are the complete opposite. And this is the perfect opportunity for Crackers Keenan to make his big fucking like speech to come out when he opens the tabernacle and brings out the Holy Grail. So I'm going to tip North in this game based purely on my belief that Crackers Keenan will pass around that cup and encourage all the warriors to take a deep whiff and get filled with the Zenbona spirit. I'm tipping North, and that's my lock of the week.
I knew you were going to lock that. I could tell.
Did you?
By the way, we said at the start of this podcast, let's keep it to an hour because like we wanted to record something else afterwards. And we're currently at an hour and fucking 20 at this point. And what I've realized about this show is like by not talking about football, it takes heaps longer to do this show.
Are you picking in that game?
In the North Melbourne game, no Cunnington, no North Melbourne. That's my
okay.
rule.
All right, Sydney Swans take on Hawthorn in a must-win game for both. Sydney in a similar position to North. They don't look quite as dire. It's obvious that Horse is playing the kids and just testing some things out this year. But Hawthorn have invested in some mature age recruits, and they're just not going anywhere. And it's enough to make people question if Clarko should be there in a couple of years' time. Ridiculous.
This is a perfect week for Clarko to get the boys up, though. He's been in the newspaper headlines. Yeah. Is he still a good coach? This is the typical game that comes out and, you know.
What stunt will Clarko pull to get the boys over the line?
Oh, exactly. Well, you don't remember that night in Canberra when it was snow. So where's this being played? Where's this game being played?
SCG.
SCG. Okay. You know what he does? Clarko's got to inspire the boys. So that night when it was snowing in Canberra and he just walked out there in the shirt, in the shorts and the short sleeves, and, you know, it was just like a statement moment. He's got to do that about COVID. He's got to come out.
Lick a railing.
He's got to lick a railing. He comes out of the start. He puts his tongue on the railing of the SCG and he just does a slow lap of the entire ground, licking the railing the entire way, and then they bounce the ball.
I'm gonna pick Sydney in this game.
Hawthorn, for me.
Saturday night, Port Adelaide, top of the ladder, take on St Kilda, who broke their hoodoo by beating Adelaide in Adelaide. Never won at Adelaide Oval, haven't beaten Adelaide in the last 10 outings. Now, I'm going to make a controversial pick here. I'm normally gloom and doom and stuff. I get the feeling we're going to win this game. And I base that purely on the fact that Port Adelaide are coming off such a high. That win was so huge. We, going over to Adelaide, all we had to do was just win that game, just get over the hoodoo, get used to the flight from Noosa to Adelaide. We've done all that. I reckon we're going to be in a much better position when we come back. I reckon we could win this game. I'm picking the Saints.
I just want to say also that for the people at home who can't see this, I like the fact that you've picked up at some stage in this podcast a whiteboard marker. Charlie's in a little room and there's a whiteboard to the side of him and he's picked up the marker. And now that you're talking about football, it really feels like we've crossed to you in some sort of strategy room and you're like moving stuff around the whiteboard and you've got all these theories. I love it. I think that Port Adelaide are going to this is the sort of game that Port Adelaide traditionally lose. I think they're going to win and prove that they are a genuine premiership contender.
On Sunday, the Crows take on the Bombers at Adelaide Oval. Bombers looking for revenge. Adelaide showed some improvement. I reckon Bombers in this game.
Yeah, Bombers.
Although, wouldn't surprise me if the Crows get up. Over in Perth, the Eagles take on Collingwood. Probably match of the round besides your game against the Gold Coast. 8th versus 3rd. Resurgent Eagles. JJK back in form. Collingwood doing it without DeGoey. Backs against the wall?
Nah, they're premiership favourites at the moment. You can't be equally premiership favourites and backs against the wall, in my opinion. So I think that is the difference in this game. And I say the Eagles scare everybody. Everybody is written off the Eagles. They're back at home. They're in front of a huge crowd. The Eagles play really good football again and suddenly everyone realises the Eagles are back in town.
Demons taking on the Lions and what will be a really good game now that Melbourne's back into some kind of form. I'm going to pick the Lions in that game. I think they're getting shit together real good.
I think they're going to be, they're definitely in the handful of teams that you'd say at this stage could win it.
Cam Rayner is, in the same way Petrarca's coming along, Cam Rayner is starting to show glimpses now as well. And the final match is the Dockers. Let's make special mention of the Dockers, Will. Our favourite players, Nat Fyfe, Michael Walters, the guy got tackled in the goal square, George McFly, and the dude who kicked the winning goal, the first gamer who kicked the winning goal against the Saints 2 weeks ago.
So who are the Dockers playing?
Cats.
Cats, probably, right?
Well, I'm going to pick Frio as a little peace offering to those angered Fremantle supporters. Sorry I didn't talk about your team more. We really do like them. To be honest, since Ross Lyon's left, I've lost a little bit of interest in your team. But if they win on Monday, you'll win me back. How about that? I'll talk about the... If they win, I will talk about Frio for a good 2 minutes next week.
And they won't win, so that's fine. Good promise. Okay. Good empty promise to make.
All right, that's the show for this week. We'll see you next week. Play on, not 15.
Well, we are two guys.